Thank you. You know, I dislike working with the whiny, sniveling, neurotic women. And that's what I always turn into when I have to talk. I made you people a beautiful talk this morning about 5 o'clock. I'm sorry you weren't awake to hear it. I told you how wonderful I am. Now I'm going to try to be honest, which is a little difficult for me to do at times. I think I'm grateful that I was asked to talk here. I think I am. I said I was going to try to be honest. I love you people. I really do. You've been most wonderful to me. I know you love me, and that's what makes it easier. But I really wish that I was at 2007 North Sea, Midland, Texas, in my bed with my head covered up. I'll feel differently after this is over, I know. I am Frances Newsom, and I am an alcoholic and a drug addict. And because of God's grace, and because this program does work, I'm sober this morning, and I have been since July the 7th of 1962. That's the way we introduce ourselves in Texas. I am a member of the 710 group. It's the best group in the world, and if I didn't think so, I'd find me another one. I have 2 sponsors. They're the best sponsors in the world, and if I didn't think so, I'd find me another one. This is Bob White and Joe Clary, and they don't mind my saying this. They may after this morning, but that's their problem. I talked to Bob and Marceline last night. Buck and I both did. I have, I guess, allowed myself to get too tired of my own doing. It's my own immaturity and my own ego. And I spread myself too thin lots of times, and I try to be all things to all people, and then I have problems. So I said I wasn't going to tell this, but I'm going to. I had a little crying jag Thursday, you know, and I did tell Evelyn about it, and it was feeling sorry for myself, of course. So we talked to Bob and Marceline last night. They said to tell everybody hello, and just I know that most of you here feel this way about your sponsors, you know, and I love these people. I feel like they literally saved my life. I was carrying on before we left Midland to Joe, my other sponsor, about, I said, I have nothing to say. I just tell the same old thing over and over again, you know. And I don't express myself too well. I have realized the longer I'm here, the less I know about the program, actually. But I have made an attempt to work the steps, and I have attempted to try to practice these principles on a daily basis. But at times it seems like nothing will come out. I said, I just don't have anything to say. I want to tell the same story. And he looked at me and he said, well, Frances, you can always change your story. You can get drunk. And I said, no, thank you. I have been most fortunate that these 2 men have loved me enough to always tell me the truth. It has hurt at times. They've made me cry many, many times. But as a result of this, a strong sponsorship, I feel that it has helped me maintain my sobriety. I'll never forget the time that I was crying to Bob about my inferiority complex that I had. And he just looked at me and he says, "Well, honey, if you feel inferior, it's because you are." And I said, "Thanks a lot." That's about all the sympathy I got from him. Another time, I've been sober about a year and a half, and I thought I'd done a great job up to then, trying to work these steps. Again, I went crying to him, and I said, "I'm not helping anybody. I'm still taking. I've been a taker all my life. I'm not giving anything." And he said, "What does it say in the big book?" He says, "Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us." And he says, "Honey, you just ain't fit yet." So I got it again. I'd like to tell you a joke that I feel more or less tells my story. I'd like to tell it and shut up and sit down, but I'm not going to. I'm going to go on and tell you my story. It seems that this lady was on her wedding trip, and she was going to buy a gown for this occasion. And she went into this lingerie shop, and she was undecided about the color. So she walked over to the clerk and started talking to her, and she said that she was undecided about the color. She couldn't decide. And the clerk said, "Well, I don't know, but if your life has been lily white up to now, I would suggest white. And if it has not, I might suggest pink." So the woman thought for a few minutes, and she said, "Well, could I have a white one with just a touch of pink?" And I'm wearing almost a solid pink dress this morning, so you know, you know the shape I was in when I got here. I wasn't too well. I guess I'm like most of you too, in that when I first took a drink, I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved the taste and the smell and the way it made me feel. And it made me something that I was not. I'm 5'4", and I used to have kind of mousy colored hair. And I'm rather short necked, and I'm not neat. But you know, this drink made me about 5'2", and I had blue eyes, and I had a little turned up nose, and I had a longer neck, I had prettier legs, and I was cuddly. And I loved stuff. I really did. It made me cute and little, and I loved it. I loved everything about it. I did not set out, certainly, to become what I eventually became. I certainly didn't start drinking with the idea in mind that someday I would make the Big Spring State Hospital, you know. That was not my goal in life, certainly. I believe for me that probably the only kind of social drinking I did, and I got this from Homer Ramsey, was that when someone said, "I believe I shall have a drink," I said, "So shall I." And that's about the only social drinking I did. In 1950, Buck and I were living in Fort Worth, and I was 7 months pregnant with our second child, and Buck was to make a trip to New Orleans for a convention, certainly unlike any AA convention I've ever been to, and I went with him. And when we returned home, one of his fellow workers that had got made this trip with us commented to him, and Buck told me verbatim what he said when he got home. I love that word verbatim. I hear Jolie say, this is verbatim. He says, your wife can drink more for the shape she's in than any woman I have ever seen. This was no compliment, and of course we didn't take it as such. I was embarrassed, and Buck was embarrassed. I thought I was a lady, and I think I was trying to be a lady. But in my opinion, it's difficult to be a lady and drunk. It's also difficult for me, and looking back at myself, to be a good mother and drunk. And I don't think that I was. Drunkenness and being a good mother or a good wife or a good daughter or anything are just not compatible. I have come to believe this for me. When, of course, I didn't recognize this statement as connecting a problem with me or my drinking. I just thought, well, I goofed on this trip, you know. Buck didn't act right. His sister was with us, and she didn't act right. So, I worked it out this way. I can still do some of this at times pretty good. But when Buck and I first married, I'm very fortunate, I think we both are very fortunate in this, in that we had something to go back to. Because when we were married, we were in love. And this gave us something to go back to, and there was lots of water under the bridge. Lots of things to get used to again, and lots of getting acquainted again, and lots of unlearning a lot of things, and just, you all know what I'm talking about. But I'm grateful that we had something to go back to work on. And I think that this was it, that we were in love. And I'm 45 years old now. We have two boys. We have been married 28 years. And after almost 8 years of sobriety, we are still in love as a result of this program and you people. I'm real grateful for this. And I'm grateful to you, Al-Anons, for getting him straightened out. Look. I want to tell you, he wasn't in great shakes when he got here. He was mean, mean, mean. But anyway, when we first married, of course, I had this dream like I suppose all women do. I knew that everything was going to be wonderful and life was going to be a bed of roses. And, of course, this is not so. This is the fantasy world that I lived in. It's just not this way. I knew that if Buck succeeded in his profession, that it would be as a result of my doing, because I wasn't quite sure he had it. I almost drank up his job. But I was going to be the good woman, you know, behind the successful man. I've always heard there's one, and I was going to be it. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way, or maybe fortunately now, the way things have turned out. But when we moved to Roswell in 51, I was beginning to suspicion that something was going amiss with this wonderful dream that I had and these plans that I had made. We had our boys by then, and my drinking was becoming quite a problem. This was when I made a decision to control my drinking. I still didn't pin it down to myself as having a drinking problem. It was still outside things, you know. It was still Buck and his sister and his mother and my sisters, you know, the whole bit. But I thought maybe I might help this by controlling my drinking. I was goofing up at places that I should not. So, when I put this into practice, I was horrified to find that my drinking got worse. And this is when I really got scared. And this is when the whole world began crumbling down around my feet. because I did not know what was happening, and I do not believe that Buck knew what was happening. We started the hospital route, trying to find something wrong with me that the doctors and surgery could tend to. I got addicted to hospitals and surgery, and I really did. I loved them. I loved to have surgery. I made a decision to turn my life and my will over to the care of doctors as I understood them. And I loved it. I loved it. But when I would go in the hospital, the verdict couldn't be bad enough. You know, I could just hardly wait to find out what it's going to be. And I have come to believe that I have had almost every ectomy known to womankind. And probably some that weren't necessary. I don't know. It doesn't make any difference. That's all over with anyway. But, oh, I did love to look pale on that white pillow, you know. I wanted Buck's undivided attention. And, you know, to this very day, I have never had it. To this very day. So I quit trying. I just gave up. And I continued to drink. And, of course, I didn't get well. I never have any problem at all with the insanity. The second step. Of course, I believe for me, the insanity this talks about is to ever take that first drink or those first drugs for me. That's the real insanity. But there was one particular time that I learned a lesson about some insane action. I was drunk and had been drunk all day, and I was mad at Buck because I was drunk. He came home from work, which was a mistake, and he opened the front door and did not say a word, and I walked up to him and slapped him, and that's the worst mistake I ever made in my life. Because he turned me away but loose. I like never got up on that floor. And that, for me, is insanity, I'll tell you. You know, I used to get down, unable to function, drinking in bed, throwing up. My mother was always called in, God bless her. She always came. She's a good member of the Church of Christ. I was raised in the Church of Christ. Nothing wrong with it, but I was just making this point so, you know, she had no understanding at all about alcoholism. She told me one time that, she said, "Francis, if you had married a preacher, honey, you never would have turned out like this." I said, "Mama, I'd have turned him away but loose." But she just didn't understand. She has tried to be understanding, and she's a wonderful woman. But she always came when she was called. And I'll never forget her for this, of course. And this particular time she came, they did the usual thing. You know, they first took my bottle away from me. And I was so sick at this time that it was the wrong thing to do, really, because I really needed a drink. And I found a bottle of rubbing alcohol, and I drank it. You know, what else? I've heard people say it will cause some kind of disturbances down in, you know, here. And it does. But it did the job. You know, it did the job. And then because I still needed the drink, and I still think I did, I found a bottle of Pine Sol, and I drank it. And this is the cleaning fluid, and it's deadly. So they rushed me to the hospital, of course, and pumped my stomach. And I tell you, when they take you into the hospital reeking of Pine Sol, people do a double take. They really do. Because I have come to believe that certainly no social drinker drinks Pine Sol, and very few alcoholics. And this is when AA was first brought to me, and this was in 55 in Roswell, New Mexico. I was in hospital, in very bad shape. And I was horrified and surprised that Buck would think that I was an alcoholic. And of course today I'm surprised I was surprised. There I was, drinking vodka and rubbing alcohol and pine salt. And I was surprised that he thought I was an alcoholic. I went to AA in Roswell. I don't talk about this very much because I gave him such a bad time. I never went to a meeting sober, so I didn't know what they were talking about, of course. And I did the one almost unforgivable thing, I think. I don't even think some groups allow it. I excused myself during the meeting and would go out and have a drink and come back in. And, you know, I wondered, looked back and wondered why nothing could get through, you know. I know now, of course, why nothing could get through. When we left there, the man that brought me the message while I was in the hospital, he says, "Honey," I have seen him since I've been sober. He said, "Honey, we did not give up on you. We just gave out." And I know what he means by that. I've had some experience with some myself along that line. Buck didn't go with me in Roswell to AA or Al-Anon. He had he was mean by then, and he had a very closed mind. He didn't want to be married to an alcoholic. And he used to put it a heck of a lot stronger than that. I say on a daily basis, and I still believe it. He says it's not true, but I still believe it. He's 6'3¼", and he would stand up all that height and look down at me with that look that you know, and shake his head and say, "My God, what have I ever done to deserve you?" And you know, I don't know what he had done to deserve me, but he had me, and there I was. And he'll tell you, because he's told so many people, that his love of poetry drove me to drink, and this is not true. Now, the poetry he quotes to you, and the one he'll use tonight, is the most beautiful thing I have ever heard. But that's not what he used to quote to me. He used to say, "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." And then I immediately thought, he knows something, you know. After this, I went to Timberlawn in Dallas and stayed 6 weeks. And was free of alcohol for 6 weeks. And my psychiatrist there at the end of this time told me that there was nothing that they could do for me other than keep me locked up and away from alcohol. And he suggested AA. And I thought I had already tried it and that it didn't work. So, of course, I went home to drink again. After being free of alcohol for 7 weeks, I did drink again, and I drank a half a pint of vodka. And they told me that they found me on the floor in the living room, frothing at the mouth and in a coma. And they took me out to the Pecos Valley Lodge there at Roswell, which is New Mexico's answer for the rehabilitation of the alcoholic. And this is where Buck will tell you tonight that I used to joke about this, and of course it is comical in looking back, but at times it still kind of grabs me where it hurts, you know. I knew I was losing the family, And I felt even stronger about it when they served the divorce papers on me out there, you know. And I looked at the grounds, and it was habitual drunkenness, and I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe he would do this to me. I still thought I was so wonderful. He did not know how fortunate he was. And poor man, I just did terrible things to him, you know. He wasn't too kind to me either at times, but I really did. I can look back and know that I was like a leech, you know. I latched on and I would not let go. And he tried to get rid of me a time or two, but I just was like a leech. I just drained him, you know. And I just drained him. He'll love to tell you about the way I did drain him financially, but
anywhere?
We've got an awful shake. I realized that I could not drink any longer. I knew within myself that I had lost all tolerance for alcohol. I just couldn't drink. And this frightened me. I calmed myself out of the divorce, and we moved to Fort Worth. And because I could not endure sobriety, I couldn't stand myself, and I couldn't stand living and facing him on a daily basis and our boys on a daily basis, knowing what I knew. I couldn't stand sobriety. I knew I couldn't drink. I knew this. I knew I couldn't support myself if I did get kicked out. But most of all, I knew that I was allergic to alcohol. Now, I knew this after that experience of the half pint. And so I did the only thing that I knew to do, because I had had a little brush with drugs in Roswell. I went to the doctor, and of my own doing, and got my prescription started. And I got addicted to drugs and was addicted to them for 5.5 years. Mainly the amphetamines. I got particularly fond of Daprisal. Some of you may not be familiar with it, but it's a compound, and it did great things for me, just like the alcohol. But I also learned to take anything I could get my hands on. I had no fear of it whatsoever. We went visiting, which finally got seldom, but when we went, I always made my way to the bathroom first, to the medicine cabinet. And I took a little of everything I could find. I had no fear of it whatsoever. How I ever lived through it, I'll never know. But we moved to Midland during this time, and I pulled some real funny things there, and I used to spend most of my time, and I think the reason I did this was because I felt secure there, but I spent most of my nights anyway. I would stay up 3 days and 3 nights and sleep. And I would spend most of my nights down at the police station, visiting with the policemen. And they had a lounge down there, and I was nuts. I asked them if I could bring my hi-fi records down, so so we could dance, you know. I later found out that they were checking on me all the time. I didn't know this. I also drove around a lot at night, and I carried a loaded gun in my lap. I got to real hostile with on these drugs. And every time a car would drive up beside of me, I'll never forget this as long as I live, I'd say to myself, "I dare you say anything to me." And of course, there's no telling what I would have done. I was just as nutty as a fruitcake. I really was. I guess I'm most fortunate that I did not combine the alcohol and the drugs, and I didn't. I drank at times during this 5.5 year period, but I had gotten off the drugs and would try to drink and could not. Absolutely could not. Couldn't even keep one down. I think it was probably as much a mental thing as anything else, but I just could not drink. So I continued to take the drugs. I went to a church service. I started going to church services there in Midland. I know now that I was looking for something. I really was. I was sick, and I was sick and tired of the whole bit, and mostly of me. And I went this particular night, and I was disturbed because no one had paid too much attention to me, I didn't think, and had not certainly given me my due credit, whatever that was. I was an attention seeker, and I was willing to go to any lengths to get it, and to a degree, I guess I still am. But anyway, this particular evening, about the close of the service, I decided, I believe I'll have a spell, you know. And I had one. I could bring them on at will, you know. And, of course, it stopped the church service cold, you know. I was dying. What else? And they called the ambulance and Buck, and fortunately, Buck got there first. I didn't need to go to the hospital. I needed a good sound thrashing, and I did. I was a spoiled brat the time I got here, I'll tell you. as shallow as anything you've ever seen. I had no depths to me whatsoever. Terrible, terrible. But I have to believe that I was sick and that I did have a disease. I still have this disease, and I hope I never forget it. I hope I never forget where I came from, because I've heard this. I almost forgot my name this morning. I thought, boy, I'm in real trouble, because Homer Ramsey has told me so many times. He says, when a person, he who forgets their past is doomed to repeat it. And I said, God forbid. I've had it. I couldn't stand any more of that. I started back going to AA again in Midland, and I was still taking my drugs, and had gotten me my first sponsor, which is Bob White, and they decided something was wrong with me, that my behavior was rather peculiar, and they asked Buck if this was my normal behavior, and he said, well, I guess so, but I've never known anything else in different. So anyway, they had a meeting about me out at Bob's house one night, and if some of you have had meetings about you, and you're at present, and they don't talk to you, you know, they say, what are we going to do with it? Say, I don't know. I was finally asked if I was willing to go in late to get off the drugs, and of course, what else can you say but yes when you're cornered, and I said yes, and then Bob said the almost unforgivable thing. He said, are you willing to go to Big Spring State Hospital? And, I just couldn't believe it. But I said yes, because again, what are you going to do, you know, when you're back into a corner? Buck had always done so well by me in the hospitals, you know. I'd always gone to the best with my record player and records and lingerie and all this crap. But I said, yes, I would go. And that night, and 50 Daprosol later, I changed my mind. And I told Buck about it, standing in front of the 710 group. I told him I wasn't going. And it was about 6:30 in the morning. I'd been out all night. And so he just turned around and walked off. He didn't say anything. And I walked in the club and was visiting, and it got later in the morning. You know, this was on Friday. And a little bit of policeman opened the front door and walked in, and I remember thinking, and I'll never forget this either, I said to myself, I wonder if he has a problem, you know. And he did, and it was me. He had papers to serve on me, to put me in jail yet. I never have understood this. But anyway, my appointment supposedly was for Monday, and this was Friday, and some of the good members there got my appointment set up to that afternoon, and they took me over to the Big Spring State Hospital. This was the Buck has checked back, and I know this is true because he tells me it is. He says that this is the 57th time I had been in hospitals for alcoholism or drug addiction, which makes no difference now, but this is the way it was. And when we got over there, Joe Clary took me. And when we got over there, he asked me if I had any drugs on me. I always kept them down in my bra, you know. And so I said, yeah, and I reached down and took them out and gave them to him. And he said, they later counted them. I had 50 pills, each wrapped individually in Kleenex. And he says, your figure's never been the same since. And it's while I was there in Big Spring State Hospital, I was there 9 weeks. And it's while I was there that I was given my desire for sobriety. And as of today, I still have this desire. And I'm grateful for it. I not only needed it at this time, but I wanted it. And I think the two together is what counts. I really wanted sobriety. Of course, I went home and I realized I wanted it and I wanted to stay sober on my terms. And I don't know why I thought this would work. It never had before. But I tried it for a while and realized I was going to be in trouble if I didn't do something. I thought the steps were fine. I loved everything about it. But I was just going to stay sober, period. I was going to meetings everywhere. And I realized I was going to be in trouble, though. I was doing this on my terms, my way, and it wasn't going to work. So I run into Bob, and he sat me down for 30 minutes in the office there at 17 Group and talked to me like I hope he never has to talk to me again, because he used words that I wouldn't even use today. He talked to me with love, though, see. And he talked to me on my level of understanding. And I knew he loved me. There was no doubt about it. I knew this man loved me. And he ended up this visit with these words, verbatim. He says, "Francis, if everybody attended AA the way you do, we would meet under a tin roof out in the pasture someplace." He says, "Please, please get you a home group and support it. And because of your past behavior, I'd rather it not be the 710 group." And that was a little hard to take. And then he said this. He said, "And unless you want to try to work the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, get you another sponsor." He said, "I don't have time to mess with you." So I went home, typical alcoholic, determined to try to work the steps, and determined to make the 710 group my home group, for which I'm grateful that I did. It was not long after this visit with Bob that I had for me my first spiritual experience. I was upstairs on our bed in our bedroom. It was in the afternoon, and I was just before dozing off. I was going to take a nap. And I heard my name called, just as clear as I'm talking to you this morning. And I raised up on my elbow, and I said, "Yes, what is it?" And I knew immediately what it was. I knew immediately what it was. I'm not trying to, in any stretch of the imagination, tell you that God talked to me personally. I do not mean this. I just know that this thing happened to me. And I knew what it was. I knew it was either sink or swim. It was get on or get off. That I had it. That I was going to have to try to work these steps and try to practice these principles and try to make myself a part of. And I was going to have to do it on somebody else's terms other than my own. And I believe today, in looking back, that it had to be on the terms of Alcoholics Anonymous. We had tried many, many ways to keep me sober. I got sober many times. But I think what we're about is trying to maintain sobriety and help other alcoholics to do the same. As I said, I got sober many times. But I never stayed sober. My trouble was starting again, you know. So I knew that Bob was right. That what he said about the big book was right, and that I was going to have to really try to do this for myself and stay sober. So I started, and I sincerely started and earnestly started trying to work the steps with his help and others. And personally, I think it has paid off. On August the 10th, 1964, for me, and as the result of these steps, and absolutely nothing else. Of course, we know that it's God-given. And I certainly know this when I say as a result of these steps. But as a result of these steps and nothing else, I had another spiritual experience. I came home one night after a meeting and nothing special had happened. It was just another meeting. And it was late. My house was dark. And I went upstairs with my family. They were in bed asleep. And I was getting ready for bed. And I was slipping my gown on over my head. And all of a sudden I said out loud, "My God, I have been forgiven." And I had, and I knew I had. And because of where I had been And I was not a nice person. I was not a nice drunk. But because of where I had been, I could not believe that this thing had happened to me, that I had been forgiven. And as a result of this, I was eventually able to forgive myself. And I just couldn't believe that this would happen. And this is all as a direct result of this program and you people and people like it. As a result of this, and because of Al-Anon, and thank God, Buck and I would never have made it without it. There's no doubt in my mind about it. Would never have made it. Too much had happened. As a result of this then, Buck forgave me. And I know it. You know, it's just something you know. You can't explain it. You don't have to talk about it. You just know it has happened. And also, I had this experience. I want to tell you that here about 3 years ago, I was upstairs cleaning a bathroom, one of the bathrooms, and I hollered down at our youngest boy. And I said, honey, would you bring me the pine saw? And there was dead silence for about a minute. And he just died laughing. And he says, I will, Mother, if you promise not to drink it. But you see, this was his way. This was his way. And he was only 17 at the time. This was his way of telling me that all was forgiven. And I knew what he was telling me. You know, it was just that simple. So these things do happen as a result of this program. There's just no doubt about it, you know. I still have my hang-ups, and wouldn't stand here and try to tell you I don't, because I still have them, and have plenty of them. I do hope, as I said, that I'll never forget where I came from. I pray that I don't. As of today, I don't think I will. I would like to tell you that I wrote a 10-step inventory. I don't know why I had put this off so long. I think I had put it off as long as I could. And I finally wrote one, and when we were at Cook's Forest, I took it with Julian Bosselman. And I don't know how some of you are, but I'm an arranger, and I'll take control and run things until, you know, somebody has to stop me. I've just been this way, and I know I'm this way. I know I am. And so I had to write all this stuff down about my group and what I was doing and how I was behaving and how I was running things. And it was ridiculous, and it really was. This can be a sickness too, you know. So I told Julian this, and again, he told me the truth. I know that because he did, he loves me. He said, Francis, did you ever stop and think that maybe, just maybe, some woman might come to the 710 group, and because there is nothing for her to do, that she will walk away and drink again and die? And of course, that did it. I says, don't tell me that. Just don't tell me that. But he did, and this is the truth, and I have to know these things about myself. I do think for me, and this again is my opinion, I think I have a good insight to myself. I really do. I don't do much about it. I know this. But I do think that I have a pretty good insight to myself, and of course it has come about as trying to inventory and re-inventory and know me, which I certainly never did before I got here. For me, one of the things, I've gone through some funny things that I'm sure most of you have, you know. I got so good at one time, it's unbelievable. You just don't know how good I got. I wouldn't have been at all surprised if I had been the second, you know, something. And this is dangerous, of course. This was spiritual pride, and it was terrible, really. It was sickening. I don't see how people stood me. And then, of course, I went through the thing of where I believe that I had the message. I forgot it was this message, you know, tried to carry this message, which would be the message of my own spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. But I thought I had the message, you know, and I was going to sober up all these women. And of course, I'm not going to do it. I'm not. Never have gotten anybody sober. I'll tell you how smart I am. Here a while back, we had a girl living with us at the house for a while. She didn't have any place to stay, and she had a convulsion. And I've been around alcoholism and convulsions, and I know, you know, what I'm supposed to be doing. And I stuck my fingers in her mouth. And I like, well, you know, I like to never got them out. I had to have a tetanus shot. All kinds of things. But anyway, I'm so glad that this is over. I do love you people. I mean, I'm so glad my part's over, excuse me. I do love you people. I really do. I believe that I have come to believe this too, and I've come to believe so many things in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I could rattle on and on about them, but I won't. But I have come to believe this, that love is our answer, and without it, we'll die. I do believe this for myself anyway, that I found this thing that is so tremendous that if you can't even, I can't describe it, but I know it as love, and it's this warm, gooey, sticky, yummy feeling I get every once in a while, you know. And then I know people love me. And, of course, it's been hard for me to receive love. And I didn't know this about myself for a long time. I loved people. I just loved them and adored them. And I'm a kisser. I kiss and hug and carry on something terrible. And I feel right insulted when somebody walks up to shake my hand. You know, I want to hug them and kiss them. I found a legal place to do it, Lord. I want some more of it. But I love that hugging and kissing. And I have come to believe that love is certainly the answer. I know that in the end, as we will all experience it someday, God is all there is, and that'll be all there is God, me and God. And I hope a day at a time I can live such that things will work out all right. Kind of making the plans that way anyway. And I hope it works out that way. But anyway, as a result of these steps, and certainly as I've said, nothing else, we tried many things and they didn't work. So I have to know that it's as a result of this program that has been so freely given to me by so many people. I've had so much help, and I want to thank you today. It has really helped me to talk. I guess I needed it. But as a result of these steps, I have had a spiritual awakening. And I have been able, with God's help in these steps, to maintain sobriety. And with this, again, I have come to believe that the Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. And I also know that it says this in the Bible, and I'm not a Bible student, but I believe it because it sounds so wonderful to me because of where I have been. That he tells us that in his house there are many mansions. And, you know, I just really and truly believe this morning that there is one for me. Thank you.